Jack Moore, thank you so much for taking a few minutes this week to talk a little bit about your career at WRTI.
Well, thanks for asking.
You're such a presence here, and as a listener, I always thought of you as this warm, friendly voice with the most amazing stories and funny anecdotes and encyclopedic knowledge of music and the musicians who make it from centuries ago, but also the musicians today in our community who are making it. And then when I came to work here and I met you, and all of those impressions have just grown exponentially. I can't tell you the number of times that when I'm working on an art story, you have saved the story by giving me some insight into a musical phrase or some historical tidbit or some other idea that I had never thought of. And you just have so much knowledge. You're such a tremendous resource. When did this all get started? How did you get interested in classical music?
Ooh. Well, my grandmother was a pianist, and she taught piano lessons many years ago. And I used to visit her on occasion, and I would bring my 45s here with me, my 45 RPM records. And I brought the Beatles, and she wouldn't let me play it on her record player because she said it would break the record player if I played the Beatles on it. So she introduced me to other things, and then we would listen to the Metropolitan Opera on Saturday. She almost had to tie me down for that when I was a youngster. But eventually it grew on me. And I became interested in playing a musical instrument when I was in school. And it just kind of grew from there.
What was that musical instrument?
It was the trumpet. Now, my grandfather, it was kind of a sad story. My grandfather died before my mother was born. A month before my mother was born, he died. But he was a trumpet player, and he had an orchestra in his church, and my grandmother was the pianist, and he played the trumpet, and he would lead this orchestra. So she gave me his trumpet, which I still have, which was, I checked it out, it was a pre-World War I Holton trumpet, and it was silver.
Wow.
And it had been closed for many years, and it smelled really bad when I opened the case. But I persevered, and so growing up in Bridgeton, New Jersey, I played in the junior high school band, and then my parents went and got me a new trumpet that had a picture of Al Hurt on the cover, on the case.
Did that make a difference?
Well, it did, because he was a big deal, Al Hurt, you know. And nobody knows who he is today, but back then, that was a great thing. So I still have that, too, and I still play. I play in the Verdi band in the summertime, and I still use the Al Hurt trumpet that my parents gave me when I was in, I guess I was about in seventh grade.
Wow, that's interesting, because I always think of you as a violist.
Well, I do that too. But I taught myself how to play the viola, because playing trumpet in an orchestra, especially when you were in high school, our orchestra wasn't really that good, so it was boring. And I would sit there for hours at a time and not play, and all the string players were over there sweating bullets and suffering. And so I wanted to join them instead. So you taught
yourself to play the viola?
Yeah, I did. And just went from there. I did study it eventually, but I already kind of played it before that.
Huh. So when did you get involved in radio?
When I was a kid, my father was in the construction business, and he was a construction estimator. He would go to job sites, or he would look at plans, and he would figure out how much it would cost to do something. So WIP radio at that time was on Rittenhouse Square. And he said it was a Saturday, and he wanted to go look at it because they were going to completely revamp their studios. And this was right before WMMR went on the air as a rock station. And at that time, it was WIP-FM, and they played middle-of-the-road music, and the disc jockeys from the AM would do it on the – it's a long story. But anyway, he took me with him, and I sat in the studio with the disc jockey who was on the air at WIP, and – just was transfixed and mesmerized by the whole thing. And he was a guy, and he was playing records, and he was playing commercials, and he was just opening the mic and purring into the microphone. And I thought, you know, I want to do that.
How old were you again?
I was about 11, maybe. And then I couldn't decide if I wanted to grow up and be a conductor or a disc jockey. And I really still haven't grown up, I guess, because I don't know to this day which one I want to do.
You're still doing.
I'm still doing both. So I got my first radio job when I was 14 at a little station in the town where I grew up in New Jersey. And I have been in it and been on the air in some fashion since then.
Wow. So what do you love about it?
It's really hard to describe. But to sit in the studio, now classical music is different, but when I first started doing this, I played, you know, the Beatles and Eagles and things like that, and it was pop music. And I just enjoyed communicating with the audience, and being 14 or 15 years old, it wasn't always that easy, but I got better at it as time went on. And then I got involved in classical music. Now, this is something that I had performed and studied in college. I didn't come to classical music radio till very late in my career. And to be able to go in the studio and share this music that I love so much with an audience who wants to hear what I have to say about it and who wants to hear the music, maybe something they haven't heard before, or a performance by someone that they hadn't heard before or heard a long time ago. And just to be able to share that is really fabulous.
Well, your collection of CDs and albums in your garage is legendary around here.
Yeah.
So you have, when you talk about the music you love, you have just been accumulating more and more and more of that.
Yes. My wife's not very happy with it, but I have, I think, 5,000 or 6,000 LPs and an equal number of CDs, many of which are here, by the way, because when we first came here 21 years ago, we had an extremely small library because people think we brought the whole library from WFLN, and we didn't. We weren't allowed to do that. We came here with, I think, 3,000 CDs, and that was about it.
Well, having such a vast collection, having been listening to music your whole life, do you have any favorites?
Yeah, I suppose. And over the years, people have asked me who my favorite composer is. And I always said, I don't have one. And, you know, come on. But Shostakovich is right up at the top of my list. Rachmaninoff is, too. And Dvorak, they do all right, those guys.
What about them?
They just reach me in a certain way that perhaps others don't. I love all music, but those are the ones that if I have to turn to something, I would turn to one of those.
And do you turn to music? Listening to music all day long and then conducting orchestras, and music is so much a part of your life when you're working and you work so much. When you have downtime, is there music that you turn to if you're feeling at all sad or happy, or do you use music that way?
No, I don't. And maybe it's because I hear it all day long here. I don't use it that way, but when I hear something that catches my ear, or if I put something on that I know I love a lot, I listen to it to be moved by it, but not necessarily because I'm feeling poorly or I'm happy or
right.
Doesn't really have anything to do with it for me.
Well, you mentioned sharing the music you love, and that's another responsibility you've had here at WRTI, choosing the music, curating it, deciding what you want to share. What's your philosophy been about programming music?
I want people to hear music and have them affected the same way I am. So if I hear something that really grabs me and stirs me, and of course it's different for everybody, but if I hear something that really grabs me or stirs my emotions in some way, I want other people to have that experience. And a lot of times people, especially people who don't listen to classical music, don't get that kind of feeling. Because I think that's the one thing that classical music has that other music doesn't have. And popular music is terrific, and I like it, but it never really affects me the same way as if I heard Shostakovich's 10th Symphony, the symphony that he wrote after Stalin died, and he was kind of saying, okay, Stalin's gone, now I can do what I want. And to know the background of that and to be able to share that and then to experience the feeling that the music, that's a different thing. And it's one, that's the experience that I want listeners to have.
Well, that's interesting that you also care about the history and the context. And that's one thing I've always, it's always struck me. Very often when I see you at the station, you talk about, have you ever heard this performance? Or do you know this story of when he, this conductor went out on stage? And there's so many stories in your repertoire, actually.
Well, I made them all up. No, okay, I didn't. But I just enjoy reading about it. I read a couple of different books, and I over the years, one book really affected me. And, well, there's Shostakovich's testimony, which is supposed to be about his life, written by someone else, that people think it's true or false or made up or whatever. I think there's a grain of truth in it. But I read a book by the violinist Rostislav Dubinsky called Stormy Applause. It's out of print now, but he was the first violinist in the Borodin String Quartet in the Soviet Union. And I read the book, and I just couldn't put it down. And it just was the most moving book about something about music that I had ever read. And it was, I've never forgotten it. And I read it like 40 years ago.
Do you remember particular parts?
Yeah. Dubinsky was Jewish. The rest of the quartet wasn't. There was a KGB agent in the quartet. And so he always had to be very careful when he would go around and on tour. And he came home from a tour one time, and his wife was missing. She had been taken away by the KGB, and he didn't see her for like 2 months. Didn't know what happened to her. Never heard anything about whether she was alive or dead. She came back, and,
yes,
you know. And the other thing was, I remember reading in the book that, of course, Prokofiev and Stalin died on the same day.
Right.
And Prokofiev was overshadowed by Stalin's funeral. And so they played for like 16 hours nonstop at Stalin's coffin as people came by and watched. And then they packed their stuff up and they went and they played for Prokofiev just because they wanted to. After 16 hours of playing, they wanted to do this, and so that's what they did.
Wow.
And that's, you know, stories like that make the music as alive today as when it was written 50 or 100 years ago.
Right. And the other thing that you're a great source for are jokes. and the humor in classical music and the humorous stories about musicians playing classical music. Where do you get that?
It's just experience, and I guess reading and going to concerts and seeing. And, you know, as a musician, when people are performing, you can notice things that you perhaps wouldn't notice as just a regular audience member. And I remember going to see, I took my grandmother, the grandmother with the piano and the broken record player from the Beatles records. I took her to see the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra at the Grand Opera House in Wilmington. And Pinchas Zukerman was conducting. And they must have had some experience off stage before the concert started. But he came out and he was conducting. I don't even remember what they were doing, but came out on stage and bowed and did it, turned around and started conducting the orchestra. And he started to laugh about something. And you could see in the whole orchestra this laughter that was going on while they were playing. You would not have known it if you'd closed your eyes and listened to it. You would never have known anything was. But just to see his face and then the faces of the cellos and the violas sitting there and obviously shared some joke. And I thought, you know, that's okay. That's pretty cool. And yet nobody else, I'm sure, would have realized what was happening.
Right. So. But it just kind of reinforces this sense of, I don't know, the human side of
exactly
the music.
Yeah.
You also conduct three orchestras, right?
Right.
And you perform. You play gigs at various functions.
Right.
How and why do you find the time to do that?
Well, it goes back to when I was 14 and I couldn't decide what I wanted to do when I grew up. So I have to do that. I have to conduct. And so I do that. And it's difficult because my schedule is, especially around concert season and the holidays, is really, I mean, I rush home from work, take a half hour nap, run out to the concert and do that. But I have rehearsals with everybody every week. And so that's part of it. But I just love to do it. And so, you know.
Well, what do you think about the value of these concerts in the community? Because you are bringing music to people in person in these events, and then in your job on the radio, you're communicating with a lot of people in a different way.
Well, it's kind of the same thing, I guess. Yeah. You know, it's the same sharing thing that goes on. Now, you know, if I conducted the Philadelphia Orchestra, it would be different. That's really a high-quality group. I conduct people who love to play. They're not always the best players, or they don't always play perfectly, but that doesn't matter because they love what they're doing. I love what I'm doing. And when the audience comes, they love the whole experience too.
Right. Well, it's great to have that kind of music in the community and to foster that.
It's great to be a part of it.
Yeah. So as you look back on your broadcasting career, have you been thinking about what it's meant to you here at WRTI, and what are you looking forward to in the next phase?
The next phase, I'm not sure. The next opportunity has not yet presented itself. Here, and my 21st anniversary was over the weekend here, and when Dave and Jill and I all came here 21 years ago, it was September the 15th, 1997. It was a new beginning, and we knew what classical music meant to people the day we walked in, because the phone never stopped ringing all day long. For the first day, for the first week, the phones never stopped. And people were just so appreciative. People were crying on the phone because it was back, because there was a week where we didn't have classic music on radio. Since being here, I have loved every moment that I've worked on the air and off the air. And there's something to be said for that. I'll miss that.